is staying dry, highs of 5 or 6 Celsius. For the weekend, the high pressure moves in, keeping things largely dry, but also keeping things cold. A little bit of morning frost and fog, but generally dry by day, with temperatures still around 5 to 8 Celsius. That's the forecast.
All right, many thanks, Alex Deacon. Now on Radio 4, Simon Russell Beale continues his reading from The Screwtape Letters, and the senior devil has turned his attention to affairs of the heart.
My dear Wormwood, I haven't yet got a report from you on young women in the neighbourhood. I should like it at once, for if we can't use your patient's sexuality to make him unchaste, we must try to use it for the promotion of a desirable marriage. In the meantime, I would like to give you some hints about the type of woman, the physical type, which he should be encouraged to fall in love with, if falling in love is the best we can manage. In a rough and ready way, this question is decided for us by spirits far deeper down in the lowerarchy than you and I. It is the business of these great masters to produce in every age a general misdirection of what may be called sexual taste. The aim is to guide each sex away from those members of the other with whom spiritually helpful, happy, and fertile marriages are most likely. As regards male taste in the opposite sex, we have varied a good deal. At one time, we directed to the statuesque and aristocratic type of beauty, mixing men's vanity with their desires and encouraging the race to breed chiefly from the most arrogant and prodigal women. We now teach men to like women whose bodies are scarcely distinguishable from those of boys. Since this is a kind of beauty even more transitory than most, we thus aggravate the female's chronic horror of growing old and render her less willing and less able to bear children. And that is not all. We have engineered a great increase in the license which society allows to the representation of the apparent nude in art. It is all fake, of course. The real women in bathing suits are actually pinched and propped up to make them appear firmer and more slender than nature allows a full-grown woman to be. Yet, at the same time, the modern world is taught to believe that it is being frank and healthy. Thus the role of the eye in sexuality becomes more and more important, and at the same time its demands become more and more impossible. What follows, you can easily forecast. You will find that your patient is haunted by at least two imaginary women, a terrestrial and an infernal Venus. There is one type for which his desire is such as to be naturally amenable to the enemy, readily mixed with charity, coloured all through with that golden light of reverence and naturalness which we detest. There is another type which he desires brutally and desires to desire brutally, a type best used to draw him away from marriage altogether, but a type even within marriage he would tend to treat as a slave or an idol. The real use of the infernal Venus is no doubt as prostitute or mistress. But if your man is a Christian, and if he has been well trained in nonsense about irresistible and all-excusing love, he can often be induced to marry her, and that is very well worth bringing about. You will have failed as regards fornication, but there are other and more indirect methods of using a man's sexuality to his undoing. And by the way, they are not only efficient, but delightful. The unhappiness produced is of a very lasting and exquisite kind. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape. My dear Wormwood, so, your man is in love, and in the worst kind, with a girl who does not even appear in the report you sent me. I have looked up this girl's dossier, and am horrified at what I find. Not only a Christian, but such a Christian, a vile, sneaking, simpering, demure, monosyllabic, mouse-like, watery, insignificant, virginal, bread-and-butter miss. The little brute. She makes me vomit. She stinks and scalds through the very pages of the dossier. It drives me mad the way the world has worsened. We'd have had her to the arena in the old days. A two-faced little cheat, I know the sort, who looks as if she'd faint at the sight of blood and then dies with a smile. Looks as if butter wouldn't melt in her mouth and yet has a satirical wit. The sort of creature who'd find me funny. Filthy, insipid little prude and yet ready to fall into this booby's arms like any other breeding animal. Why doesn't the enemy blast her for it if he's so moonstruck by virginity instead of looking on there grinning? He's a hedonist at heart. All those fasts and vigils and stakes and crosses are only a facade. At his right hand are pleasures forevermore. Ugh! He's vulgar, Wormwood. He has a bourgeois mind. He has filled his world full of pleasures. There are things for humans to do all day long without his minding in the least. Sleeping, washing, eating, drinking, making love. Everything has to be twisted before it's any use to us. We fight under cruel disadvantages. Then, of course, your patient gets to know this woman's family and whole circle. Could you not see that the very house she lives in is one that he ought never to have entered? It's one vast obscenity. It bears a sickening resemblance to the description one human writer made of heaven, the regions where there is only life, and therefore all that is not music is silence. Music and silence. How I detest them both. Noise, the audible expression of all that is exultant, ruthless and virile. Noise, which alone defends us from silly qualms and despairing scruples. We will make the whole universe a noise in the end. The melodies and silences of heaven will be shouted down. But I admit we are not yet loud enough or anything like it. Research is in progress. Meanwhile, you disgusting little... Here the manuscript breaks off and is resumed in a different hand. In the heat of composition, I find that I have inadvertently allowed myself to assume the form of a large centipede. I am accordingly dictating the rest to my secretary. Now that the transformation is complete, I recognize it as a periodical phenomenon. Some rumour of it has reached the humans, and a distorted account of it appears in the poet Milton, with the ridiculous addition that such changes of shape are a punishment imposed on us by the enemy. A more modern writer, someone with a name like Pshaw, has, however, grasped the truth. Transformation proceeds from within, and is a glorious manifestation of that life force which our father would worship if he worshipped anything but himself. In my present form, I feel even more anxious to see you, to unite you to myself in an indissoluble embrace. Signed, Toadpipe. For His Abysmal Sublimity, Under Secretary Screwtape, T.E., B.S., etc. My dear Wormwood, through this girl and her disgusting family, the patient is now getting to know more Christians every day. And very intelligent Christians, too. For a long time, it will be quite impossible to remove spirituality from his life. Very well, then, we must corrupt it. I have been in correspondence with Slum Trimpet, who is in charge of your patient's young woman, and begin to see the chink in her armour. It is an unobtrusive little vice which she shares with nearly all women who have grown up in an intelligent circle, united by a clearly defined belief, and it consists in a quite untroubled assumption that the outsiders who do not share this belief are really too stupid and ridiculous. It is not, in fact, very different from the conviction she would have felt at the age of 10 that the kind of fish knives used in her father's house were the proper or normal or real kind, while those of the neighbouring families were not real fish knives at all. Now the element of ignorance and naivety in all this is so large, and the element of spiritual pride so small, that it gives us little hope of the girl herself. But have you thought of how it can be made to influence your own patient? It is always the novice who exaggerates. The man who has risen in society is over-refined. The young scholar is pedantic. In his new circle, your patient is a novice. He is there daily meeting Christian life of a quality he never before imagined and seeing it all through an enchanted glass because he is in love. He is anxious to imitate this quality. Can you get him to imitate this defect in his mistress and to exaggerate it until what was venial in her becomes in him the strongest and most beautiful of the vices? Spiritual pride. The conditions seem uniquely favourable. your affectionate uncle, Screwtape. My dear Wormwood, yes, courtship is the time for sowing those seeds which will grow up 10 years later into domestic hatred. Avail yourself of the ambiguity in the word love. Let them think that they have solved, by love, problems they have in fact only postponed under the influence of the enchantment. While it lasts, you have your chance to foment the problems in secret and render them chronic. The grand problem is that of unselfishness. From the very outset, you can teach a man to surrender benefits, not that others may be happy in having them, but that he may be unselfish in foregoing them. That is a great point gained. Another great help is the divergence of view about unselfishness which we have built up between the sexes. A woman means by unselfishness chiefly taking trouble for others. A man means not giving trouble to others. As a result, a woman who is quite far gone in the enemy's service will make a nuisance of herself on a larger scale than any man, except those whom our father has dominated completely. And conversely, a man will live long in the enemy's camp before he undertakes as much spontaneous work to please others as a quite ordinary woman may do every day. Thus, while the woman thinks of doing good offices and the man of respecting other people's rights, each sex, without any obvious unreason, can and does regard the other as radically selfish. On top of these confusions, you can now introduce a few more. The erotic enchantment produces a mutual complacence in which each is really pleased to give in to the wishes of the other. You must make them establish as a law for their whole married life that degree of mutual self-sacrifice which is at present sprouting naturally out of the enchantment, but which, when the enchantment dies away, they will not have charity enough to enable them to perform. The most delightful results follow. In discussing any joint action, it becomes obligatory that A should argue in favour of B's supposed wishes and against his own, while B does the opposite. It's often impossible to find out either party's real wishes. With luck, they end by doing something that neither wants, while each feels a glow of self-righteousness for the unselfishness shown and a secret grudge against the other for the ease with which the sacrifice has been accepted. Later on, you can venture on what may be called the generous conflict illusion. This game is best played with more than two players in a family with grown-up children, for example. Something quite trivial, like having tea in the garden, is proposed. One member takes care to make it quite clear, though not in so many words, that he would rather not, but is, of course, prepared to do so out of unselfishness. The other instantly withdraws their proposal, ostensibly through their unselfishness, but really because they don't want to be used as a sort of lay figure on which the first speaker practices petty altruisms. But he is not going to be done out of his debauch of unselfishness either. He insists on doing what the others want. They insist on doing what he wants. Passions aroused. Soon someone is saying, "Very well then, I won't have any tea at all," and a real quarrel ensues with bitter resentment on both sides. You see how it's done. A sensible human once said, "If people knew how much ill-feeling unselfishness occasions, it would be not so often recommended from the pulpit." Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
Simon Russell Beale has been reading The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. The program was abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions. Now, here's Sailing By to take us to the shipping forecast. This is BBC Radio 4. Time now for the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday, the 22nd of November. There are warnings of gales in southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, high 1025, moving steadily east, expected rockfall 1028 by 1800 Friday. New low expected Trafalgar, 1008 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, variable 4 becoming southwesterly 5 or 6 for a time in northwest, becoming westerly or northwesterly 4 or 5 later. Rain or showers, moderate or good. North at Sarah, south at Sarah, variable 3 or 4 becoming westerly or northwesterly 4 or 5 later. Rain or showers, moderate or good. Forties, Cromarty, 4th,